Get on Team Shaq with WynnBET. We're playing parlays, boosting odds, and laying the wildest prop bets. Don't miss another game. Download the WynnBET sports betting app today.
Sign up today and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 first-time wager on a straight bet or parlay. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to a brand new episode of Swings and Mishes. I am your co-host and producer, Jeremy Taché, joined as always by Craig Mish. Craig, one of the most exciting weeks on the field of Marlins baseball in a while. How you doing on this Friday morning?
I'm doing well. It is great to be with you. This is our final episode before the 2021 All-Star break, so we have a lot to get to here as we get ready for the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game. And certainly I'm very excited for that. Excited for a weekend ahead. And let's get into it.
Yeah, it should. Man, this first half has been something for the Miami Marlins. And this last week was sort of an example of all of it. They played in six straight games that were decided at the very end. It was the 1-0 loss after Pablo's ejection after the Acuna hit by pitch on Friday. A 3-2 win on Saturday with Sandy Alcantara on the mound. An 8-7 loss after blowing a 4-run lead on Sunday. A 5-4 win with an eighth inning home run from Jorge Alfaro. A 2-1 win in extras. A 9-6 win on a walk-off homer from Jesus Aguilar. And then, of course, the 6-1 loss on Thursday. But, Craig, what were your thoughts on this eventful week of Marlins baseball and the way the Marlins competed with both the Braves and the Dodgers?
I think if you go back and you listen to our podcast earlier in the season, there are two things that have happened in 2021 with the Marlins. I think that the process in sort of predicting how this season was going to go was correct. And I think the outcome has not been. And so I think that you have to judge what you thought about the team going in on those two different levels. The process, okay, what did we think going into the season? We thought the pitching would be really good, so there would be a lot of close games.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what has played out. So that is accurate. But before the season, I also thought the team would have a lot more wins at the end of the season that they're on pace to right now. So the result is not. And that's kind of where everyone has been playing in this run differential and looking at those sort of things with some bad luck involved and injuries and all of those things happen. But this doesn't surprise me because they played exactly this way, Jeremy, against the Pirates too. Mm-hmm. This is exactly how they played with them. It does not matter who they play.
Right.
The game is going to be close in all likelihood. It's going to be a 1 or 2 run game. They'll be winning or they'll be losing. In some games, they're going to close it out and win. And in some games, they're not going to and lose.
Yep.
And so if you basically just take those three games that they could have won against the Pirates, and then you swap out these three games that they could have lost very easily against the Dodgers, you pretty much have who they are. So that's kind of the way that I see it. I know the team doesn't see it that way. And you cannot ask players or coaches these sort of questions because they give you the generic, no, we're going to take it day by day and game by game and execute and all those generic statements. But I look at the season as a whole and I look at every series and every game and I go back and I say, yeah, they could have won those games against Pittsburgh, but they could have lost the games against LA. Let's be honest, at least two of those three. I mean, they could have. So I have a bigger view on things maybe than most. And I'm guessing there are people in the organization that look at it the same way. But in essence, you want exciting games and you want people to still be engaged, by the way, on television. That's important in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. And that's exactly what they're accomplishing. But the problem is that the losses get exacerbated when the games are so close and they lose, because you feel like, Jeremy, you've committed so much time, television, 3 hours, 4 hours, going to a game, spending $200. They can't score. They're down a run. But I went Monday night and I took my family. I did not go as media this week. I'm going Friday today. But I enjoyed it very thoroughly. I thought, and even with the rain and it was pouring and it was insane, my son had my son is a huge baseball fan. It was his birthday last week, and we thought we'd be on vacation this week, but the weather sort of canceled that. But my son says to me, listen, and I take him to a lot of games, but you know, the reason why he wanted to go, and, you know, he obviously recognized the Dodgers won the World Series and all that. But, and, you know, he's a Marlins fan, which makes this whole thing very difficult for me. but he says, I want to see Pujols. So we wait and, you know, we see the lineup come out. Okay. Boom. Pujols is playing. So he's there, he's taking my phone, he's videoing it, he's saving it on his on his iPad, because he recognizes that that's probably the last time he's going to be able to see him in person. And,
he's
on the West Coast. He's been in the Angels. I was explaining to him, you know, I mean, Pujols came on my TV show, Mikosuke Sports Wrap.
Yeah.
I've known Pujols for a long time. And I'm explaining to him who he is and what he's accomplished and everything like that. And he's like, all right, let's go. So long story short, went on Monday, watched the other two games on television, or three games on television yesterday, had to work during the show. But overall, a winning 3 out of 4 against a really good team. It doesn't matter who's in it. Look, Monday, we all know everybody sat for 8 innings or whatever it was. Like, we get that. But this is just part of baseball. The Dodgers had won a ton of games in a row before they came to Miami. They chose to sit everybody on that Monday, and the Marlins ended up winning. So be it. And that's kind of where I'm at. It's been an interesting first half of the season, and this past week, without a doubt, going into Thursday, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was the best 72-hour stretch of the season, for sure.
Absolutely the best 72-hour stretch, and particularly because they were able to bounce back after that deflating loss on Sunday. I mean, we all, you and I both on Twitter and everywhere else, said season over right there, and for them to bounce back the way that they did in those three games was pretty special. And like you mentioned, I mean, to be able to have those moments at the ballpark, I, when you have those close games, that's what makes teams all that more exciting. The problem is, like you said, those close games are exacerbated when you lose. The Marlins, we've all talked about the run differential, best in the NL East, blah, blah, blah. They're 9-19, 10 games under in one run games. They're 10 games under 500 this season overall.
Yeah.
That's their season. It's they've played all these close games, and thus far they hadn't been able to necessarily come up with the big hit or the big moment. Now, a few one run wins in a row, maybe that can lead them into the second half where they can start, you know, with Anthony Bender as the closer, albeit, you know, he blew the save the other night and struck out three guys. You know, maybe there's a chance they can start sort of changing luck there. And that's how, you know, you end up winning games. But let's talk about the guy at the helm of this team this season. It's Don Mattingly, who's back for his sixth season as Marlins manager after being NL manager of the year last year. And yesterday on the broadcast, Kim Ng mentioned that the Marlins have exercised their side of the mutual team option. Don Mattingly has picked up his side of the mutual team option, and Mattingly will be back next season. Craig, your thoughts on Don Mattingly as the Marlins 2022 manager?
Everybody knows that I'm a fan of the person, and everybody knows that, and I've mentioned this many times, that when I grew up and I'm a kid from the 80s, that, I mean, to think that I get to speak to Don Mattingly either in person or on Zoom every day is insane. Mm-hmm. I saw Donnie at the game, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, and it was, I don't think it was the first time I had seen him like that close, but it was. And he saw me come up, and he said that I was not allowed on the field without a shield. He said I had to go put a shield on. Like, I mean, he was kidding, but it was funny. Like, he's like, you have to wear a shield. Nobody
That's hilarious.
Else. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, this is a tough one, because obviously I am seeing a lot of the same things that you guys are seeing, where I don't think that this has been the perfect season for him by any stretch. I think that there definitely has been a lot of, especially late inning, questionable pinch hit moves. You know, that day in St. Louis where no one played at all and they got shut down behind Sandy. I do not agree with that day either. I thought that some players should have played that day. So I can kind of go through it and find fault, and I can also find success.
Mm.
But I think, to Donnie's credit, this is more of something personal for him than I think anything else. It's interesting because he has come to the point in his career where he does not want people like me asking him about his job year after year in August and September.
Right.
And unbeknownst to me, the last time that he redid his deal, he basically said, I don't want to do this in August and September, not knowing if I'm going to be here for the future, which is really interesting. So therefore, he had the organization put in that basically option clause to determine whether or not he was going to stay based on the 15th of July, which essentially would have been the second half of the season. Very smart move right before everything opens back up. Mattingly wants to know if he is going to be around. I will be interested to find out very shortly if he has that again for next year. So let's circle that and I'll get back to you on that one. I don't know that as of yet. I will find out that answer. So that's the long answer. The short answer is I think it is fine. I think it is fine for next year. I don't think that he is the reason why the team has underperformed. Do I find things that I don't like as somebody who covers the media in terms of the on-field? Of course, but I think that you can find that with every manager. And I also think that if you go on social media and you follow the fans of every other team in baseball, you're going to find fault with 20 other managers in baseball too. It's just the nature of the game. We all have issues with the lineup. We all have issues with the bullpen. We all have issues with the usage. And that is true. So I think it's fine. I think that Donnie winning manager of the year last year and pulling that team together earned him more than 4 months of the 2021 season. I think it did. Now, does that earn him three more years? No, definitely not. Does that earn him a shot going into next year? I think it does. I will also say that if they're in this spot next year and they're 10 games under 500, I will not be able to have the same conversation. I would think that a move would need to be made and somebody else would need to come in. But there's a lot of other ramifications from this. I don't think it's possible on the way that this is trending that the entire coaching staff can come back based on the performance of the team. Right. I don't think so. And I don't believe that will be the case. We also know that James Rowson, who some people feel is the potential maybe manager either with the Marlins in waiting or maybe somewhere else, I think he's going to get interviewed again in the offseason for another job too. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. But the good news is there is stability. Mattingly is back. My guess is Mel Stottlemyre's contract's coming up, but there's no reason not to bring that guy back. I mean, they've done a really good job with the pitching. So I would guess Mel will be back again too. And sort of we know where we stand going into 2022.
Yeah, one thing that I would say about Don Mattingly that we've seen and we've talked about before on this show is he's not someone who gets too high or too low.
No.
And particularly, right? I mean, like, and that can sometimes for us in the media be something we want to push him toward too high or too low. But I do think that with a young team, that's something that is steadying. He seems to have a pretty good relationship with his players. And I do think it's interesting. Something that I think a lot of us imagined at the beginning of this build was that probably by the time the Marlins were ready to compete, you weren't so sure if Don Mattingly was still going to be the manager. And I do think that what he did last year and the relationships that he's built with some of these players earn him the cachet within the organization to be able to at least get a shot once the Marlins are ready to compete. And I think that's essentially what they're giving him here in picking up this option. So I do believe it's good for both sides of the ball club. We can pinpoint all sorts of different moments throughout the season.
There is one thing I do want to add, because there are going to be some people who are listening for sure that are going to completely disagree with what I'm saying and what you're saying. And I think that you're well within your right, by the way, to feel that way. You're well within your right to think that there could be another manager that could come in and do a better job. You're also well within your right to say, well, Craig, look, just because you have a good relationship with the manager and you're buddy-buddy with him and he's messed with you a few times this year, and you've known him for a while, you're too soft on him. And I want to be perfectly clear on this. If you follow anything that I do, you know that is not the case, okay? If there is a tough question that needs to be asked, I am the one that is doing it in these Zooms, and I am the one that is going to hold him and everybody else accountable. So I just want to be clear in that, because we can kid around, and there are times where they're getting smashed, and I'll ask him about hitting three home runs in a game against the Orioles. And I do that because I understand that there does come a point where you have to change things up and you have to sort of, soften the conversation. That is definitely the case. But do not think for a second that when the team is not going good or tough decisions need to be made, that I am not going to be the one that is in there asking that. And trust me, when they lose 7-1 and their bullpen guy comes in and saves three innings for the next day, my first question ain't going to be about that guy. It's going to be about them losing. So you can, when I'm on those calls, so you can 100% still count on me for that. I take it really seriously. And anybody that thinks that relationships are going to hold me back from making sure that everyone out there gets the right questions answered, just make no mistake about it. I will continue to do that with Donnie and everybody else.
If for some reason this is your first podcast listening to Craig, all you need to do to know that he's telling the truth here is go back and listen to like a few weeks ago when the Marlins were struggling and listen to what our sentiments were on here then and when it came to Mattingly or anybody else. So we talk about the stability of Mattingly being a part of the organization next season. The Marlins could be looking for some more stability within the organization, particularly on the field. We've talked about Starling Marte sort of ad nauseum here on Swings and Mishes the last few episodes, but the trade deadline is coming up. Kim Ng did say, quote, "We do want to keep him part of our future," when talking about Starling Marte earlier this week. Craig, what's the latest on the Starling Marte saga when it comes to his possible contract extension?
Well, I think that it's a little bit strange and it's a little bit complicated for sure, because I'm not the timing to me of all of this is, you know, does seem a little odd. I think I may have mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week. I'm going to guess that the reason why this is all happening now is because they identify that there isn't really anybody to replace him in the organization next year. I'm going to have to believe that. I cannot believe that just because I asked him and he said he wants to stay, they all of a sudden fired up a deal. I don't believe that to be the case. People have mentioned that to me, and I cannot possibly think that is the case. Now, at the same time, I will say, you know, Derek Jeter, their CEO, had said that he was happy to see that players now wanted to be here, but he did not want to comment on the contract extension because he did not want to create a distraction. And my response, respectfully, to be that you cannot have it both ways. You cannot. Right. I don't think that you can say that you're happy to see that he wants to be here, and then that's not a distraction. But then at the same time, when we're negotiating a contract, we don't want to discuss that. And I understand he's well within his right to do that. And in general, you don't hear publicly about contract extensions, except for the small problem is you have me here, who is going to make it public. And I am going to uncover as much as I can about this contract extension. So someone in the organization told me that my 3-year, $30 million offer was not right. But I don't think that I was far off from that. So I can't tell you, I can only tell you that I stand by everything that I report, but whether or not it was 3 years and 28 or 3 years and 32 or like, you understand the framework, I think, at this point as to what they're trying to accomplish. Now, as we sit here on this Friday, and I'm going to continue at this, it doesn't matter, I don't, distraction or not, I am on this until the end. I don't think that there has been much progress made at all regarding this. And we're headed into an all-star break where I don't know what Starling's plans are. I'm going to try and figure that out today as well. Like what, if he's staying in South Florida, if he's going back, I don't know what his plan is. I don't know what he's doing, but we're really up against it in terms of getting this done, which is why the whole thing is a little surprising that the process began in June, as opposed to November, December, January, February, March, April. I understand he was hurt for a little bit there too, but I guess that could have factored in, I suppose. So while it can get done, I don't know that it will. And it is sort of my understanding that Marte likes to do these sort of things when the season is not going on, but there's not really much of a choice if he wants to remain and not in South Florida and get traded. Now, the other public comments that you've heard are about him staying with the team and then figuring it out. And then that's just not happening. So I understand that, but you cannot continue to just say, oh, we'll get the draft pick And then whoever that player is for Starling Marte, okay, great. We'll see you in 3 years. Like, that's that. The Marlins have to start winning. Yeah, no, they have to start winning. And when I look at the potential, now this could change on the 30th, but when I look at the potential players that are out there to be traded on the 30th, Marte may not be the best, but he certainly could be too.
Yeah.
So I think that they have to get serious and explore that right after the draft, because the draft is coming up. So I would assume that will come and go next week. And then the talks are really going to heat up big time about who's in on him and which teams want him. And if they don't close a deal very soon, this non-distraction is going to be a full-on distraction for the next 2 weeks. This is how the trade deadline works. All of your guys get talked. I've been doing this for a long time, and all of your guys get talked about. I have not even built any teams yet for Starling Marte. Think what in 2 weeks from now, I am going to be building teams. Right. This team, that team. And I mean, this is all coming. So their time is running out with this. And people are going to ask me, is it going to get done? Do I feel that they'll sign him long term? I don't have a great answer for that. My feeling is no. But I also, you know, they hadn't even offered him anything. And then I was saying at that time that they probably weren't going to, and now they are. The whole thing has been very quickly sort of put together, and I'll keep following it for everybody as it goes. So not a lot, unfortunately, of new information for me today, but my guess is as we go along, there will be.
Yeah, I mean, the deal with Starling is so interesting because in the numbers that you guys reported within the Herald, you know, the 3-for-30 offer versus an expectation of 3 or 4 years and $50 million, you would think that there could be some place to meet in between. But like you said, the question is, are they able to negotiate that during the season?
Yeah,
starting that in June, can you really get there by July 30th? That's the fascinating question. And like you mentioned, at this point, where the Marlins are at within this, you know, quote unquote build, it's not time to lose those types of players for comp picks. If you're going to lose Starling Marte, you have to lose him for trade assets that are going to help you sooner rather than later, as opposed to, you know, just waiting for some other draft pick to develop if you lose him in free agency.
It's a hectic time of year. There's weddings, graduations, spring sports, and much more. We're busier than ever right now. And sometimes we forget to just take a second for ourselves. You know, a little you time. So this season, take a second to enjoy an ice-cold Coors Light, because you deserve a beer that's made to chill. At the end of a stressful week, I like to open the fridge and see those icy cold Blue Mountains popping off the Coors Light can. That's how you know the beer is cold, and you know what? I'm a sucker for it. It's crisp and refreshing. The beer is perfect for unwinding. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's literally made to chill. So when I need a second for myself, I reach for a beer that's made to chill. That's Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/BlueWire. Again, CoorsLight.com/BlueWire. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
If you don't have players on the field with the right skills, whether it's breakaway speed or elite playmaking ability, you're going to have a tough time winning. The same goes for your business. Indeed is a fast, simple way to make sure you're hiring MVPs. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsor job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through April 30th. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applicants that meet your must-have requirements, or else you don't pay. Go to Indeed.com/BlueWire to claim your $75 credit before April 30th. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combine, according to Talent Nest. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, and I do want to mention, because there are some people who texted me and you know, said, hey, does Marte really think he's going to get $50 million in 3 years or 4 years? And I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, whatever it was, and I just want to say it again. If you don't understand how free agency works, those are the kind of comments that you make, because there are teams in 2021's winter as of right now, I'm going to say this again, that we have not identified that are going to decide that they want to win next year. It happens every single year. No one knew the White Sox were going to spend an insane amount of money on the players that they did this offseason. No one knew the Toronto Blue Jays were going to drop one. I mean, at the time you knew because it was percolating, but $150 million on exactly. George Springer. And who is that team for next year? That team is going head to head with Miami for Starling Marte. I don't know the name of the team yet, but there is a team out there somewhere. Kansas City, Seattle, I don't know. Find a exactly. team that's been rebuilding for 4 or 5 years that wakes up and has an organizational meeting and says, Starling Marte, that's the guy that we can get. And then Miami's going, holy cow, like we thought that we could get him for this. This team came in and jumped in and got him. And then that team is now fighting, and they're fighting for the playoffs next year. So make no mistake about it. Marte is going to get that kind of money in the mm-hmm. open market. He is going to get it. Some team, if you want to consider it an overpay, are going to overpay to get Starling Marte. It happens every single year. We don't know who, but there will be a team. And look, maybe it is Miami in the mm-hmm. offseason that overpays for Starling Marte. And then we'll come back and say, wait a second, on July 9th, they could have got him for this. And then they yep. didn't. And now they got it. So look, that's all part of the conversation. But let's not be ridiculous in thinking that Marte could even get more than $50 million. It's possible. Free yeah. agency is insane. You don't know what these guys are going to get paid. You don't know who the GM is or the owner of another team makes. The owner calls. He calls his GM and says, hey, this year you have $100 million to spend. Oh, my gosh. Okay, great. Let me call Starling Marte. That's the way this works. So yep. don't be naive on that.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how this all plays out. And so while this podcast has been all Starling, we're going to talk about the All-Stars. You like that one, Craig?
Wow.
Yeah.
Not a dad yet, huh?
All right. So going into All-Star weekend, it'll be Trevor Rogers officially as the Miami Marlins All-Star. He's been remarkable to start this season. We've talked about him. Rookie of the Month in April, Rookie of the Month in May. He's been an ace for the Miami Marlins. Craig, your thoughts on Trevor Rogers' first half of this season?
Yeah, Trevor has been the biggest pitching surprise of 2021. And Scott Aldred and the pitching coordinators and everybody that has done a fantastic job with Trever has been great. Stan Meek, who drafted him many years ago, also deserves a lot of credit there. At some point, I do want to talk about this with Trevor when I can do this in person more, because there's some backstory that has not been told that is really interesting with him in his first year in the organization. But he's been phenomenal, and I think that there is a chance that he ends up as Miami's best pitcher in the future. I mean, if he can get a little bit deeper into the games, I definitely think that there is a chance of that. But deserves everything that he has coming to him for sure. And Miami's very lucky to have him as a left-handed pitcher in their rotation, no doubt about that. And I don't know what the situation is with him pitching in the game, because he's scheduled to pitch this weekend.
Right.
And that's a tough dynamic too, because Miami is just like fighting to win every single game. But yet this could be a once in a lifetime opportunity. I don't want to be the one to tell Dave Roberts that he can't pitch on Tuesday. So I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's had an unbelievable first half, and to be someone who's a rookie, who's out here making starts for the first time or second or third times against individual teams, and he's yet to give up more than 3 earned runs in a game. That's what's so impressive to me, is none of those, giant numbers in the middle of that game log. To see the consistency has been what's most impressive. And behind him in the organization, you have Max Meyer and Jake Eater. Eater added after the fact to the Futures game. Those two guys headed to Colorado as well. Craig, your thoughts on the way that these two guys in their first year in the organization have really dominated on the mound?
Yeah, I think that's why you have to have confidence in the way that the Marlins draft. Those results are coming in, and they're coming in positive. And I know that J.J. Bleday has had a tough season, and certainly that will have to be something that's reevaluated at the end of the year. We still have time, though, on that. But Peyton Burdick also looks fantastic. The Marlins can draft and develop pitching, apparently, as good as any team in the big leagues. So that's why going into this draft coming up on Monday, I, without knowing who they're going to get, I'm pretty confident that they're going to come out of there getting a couple of great future players. And they just seem to have that part of this handled. So Eater was, I mean, right now is the pick of the draft. Maybe there's a chance of that for sure. I mean, this guy's definitely going to be in the big leagues next year. He's definitely going to be in the rotation. I mean, he's a college pitcher. No reason to hold this guy back. And Max Meyer too. It's insane. They have so much high level pitching. I think the issue for the big league squad this year is that they didn't really back it up with a veteran of some kind to avoid those bullpen games. And once Hernandez got injured, and Sixto is a whole nother story, but once Hernandez got injured, that kind of derailed a lot of their plans. But I think Meyer and Eater have a chance to open up the season in the rotation next year. Why not? Edward Cabrera, why not? Trevor Rogers,
I mean,
Sandy Alcantara, Pablo Lopez. I mean, nobody wants to hear about these guys getting traded, but how do you not try and trade one of those guys to just get some, you know, star in the infield or the outfield that can hit, and they have the currency with the pitching. So we'll see. But yeah, you have to really be optimistic on the draft end of this, because you got two guys from last year's draft going to the future game. So it's impressive.
Yeah. And right before we do get to a conversation about the draft, you mentioned trading from that point of strength with the pitching. I mean, look, the last time the Marlins did that, they got the only two young hitters in the organization you feel confident about, right? 2019 trade deadline, they traded Zach Gallen for Jazz Chisholm Jr. They traded Nick Anderson and Trevor Richards for Jesus Sanchez. Those are the only two young hitters in the organization you really feel like, okay, they're here, they've arrived, we think they're definitely going to be big leaguers in the future. And so to be in a position where you have this just overabundance of pitching within the organization, it has to make you wonder about the guys who might be stuck in between the Pablo Sandy Rogers sort of generation and the Meyer Eater generation, which is these guys drafted in the years in between who are closer to big league ready, but not quite the prospects maybe that Meyer and Eater are. Could those guys be sort of out the door? Those are the thought process to me of maybe some names to start thinking about. But as we do head toward that MLB draft, the Marlins are in a different position than they've been in years past. And the reason is they were more successful on the field last year. They're not in control of this draft the way that they've been in years past, obviously picking near the top. So Craig, with that being the case and having to be sort of more reliant on what other teams do before them, what do you think the Marlins' plan of attack is going into the 2021 MLB draft?
They've been having a lot of meetings on this, and I think that they've narrowed down probably a half a dozen guys that they could pick with that selection. But I think what you said is the most accurate part of this, is that, yes, a lot of this is negotiating and figuring out money and finding out who is going to slide and who you can take and who is willing to bypass high school. That's a big factor for sure. But in essence, they're on a board now waiting for other teams to pick. And it's the poker game for them. It hasn't been like that in the past. There's only been a couple of guys ahead of them and they make the choice and that's it. But now you're looking at a dozen teams that are ahead of them. So they're going to be waiting to see who those other teams take. And if their guy is available, they will. That gives nobody anything in terms of info. I understand that. I do believe they'll take a catcher with one of their first three picks. I feel confident in that. I don't know who that will be. I know that there are several that they like, and I believe that that will be the outcome, whether it's their first pick, their comp pick, or even in the second round. I do think the organization understands that that needs to be fortified. DJ Svilak talked publicly on a call we had about 2 weeks ago that every organization needs catching help, but there does feel like there are more high level catchers available in this draft. So I do think that will be the case. I think they probably will take two position players in the first round, that first pick and then the comp pick, but I can't be 100% sure on that either. But that's the little tidbit, I guess, that I can kind of give going into this thing, only because the Marlins don't know who's going to be available at that pick when they take. So it would be foolish for me to say, yeah, they're honing in on this guy and they're going to take this guy. I mean, it's like any other draft, NFL or NBA. How do you really know who's going to be there when you're picking? So kind of have an idea on that. But I do think that this will be a position player heavy draft, as DJ did discuss that in our Zoom, basically saying that he felt like that was where the strength of this draft is. And I do think that they'll mix in some pitchers, but I don't want to dissuade people from thinking that they won't take pitchers, because they will. It's just that I don't know that this is the strength of that draft. So we'll find out what happens on Sunday night. That's a big part of what I do too. So I'll be all over that and covering that. And then next week when we come back here, we'll assess the outcome of that. But people ask me about the organization, and they ask me, like, you know, different things and, you know, personnel and players, whatever. This group that they have in terms of drafting, I am probably as or more confident in than anything else that they have going on in their draft. I mean, the results are speaking for them. These are tangible results. Yeah. You had a 2020 draft. You had two guys in the futures game this year, and you're seeing this play out. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm confident that when we get to the end, that I can blindly say there's a good shot that they're going to come out of this pretty good. That's just the way that I feel about it. As I view it the last few years, this is the way I view this with them.
Yeah, well, I'm in a position where the first time we ever talked to DJ Svilik, I was just like, oh, this guy's a genius. So I trust everything that his whole group is doing with these drafts and the way that they evaluate. But it's a good thing for the Marlins that this would be a position player heavy draft, when last year, what, they took six pitchers in five rounds. I mean, it was all...
I know, but I want to be clear on that. I don't think that has anything to do with this year.
Oh, no. To say that. It just gave them some extra space to be able to say, hey, look at our organization. We could use some position players. And, oh, how fortunate that there are a strength in position, or there is a strength in position players during this draft. Doesn't have to dictate. Best player available will still be that strategy to help build the organization. But, you know, hopefully for the Marlins, the right position players fall to those picks for them.
Right. And just one thing why I mentioned catcher, and I know that every organization needs this, maybe this is, you know, sort of important to say, is that you look at the depth of their team in terms of catcher, whether it is at the big league level or at the minor league level. I believe, even internally, and I have no problem saying this, that they have major questions about who is going to be their catcher of the present, who is going to be the catcher of the future. I firmly believe that this is the way that they feel about it, which is why I think you're going to see a catcher taken by them. And it may not be with that first pick. It may be with their comp pick. It may be with their first pick and then not with the comp. And it may also be in the second round. I don't think you're going to see three picks without a catcher. It's just my opinion. We'll see if that plays out Sunday.
All right. I guess that's what we'll have to wait and see. We also have more Marlins baseball this weekend. So just real quick before we wrap up this episode of Swings, Craig, the Marlins do head into Atlanta this weekend, and what's a pretty big series. Both of these teams are near the bottom of the division, but because the Mets are just kind of middling at the top, they're both still sort of within striking distance. Obviously, the Braves feel more confident going into the second half with everything that they have in that lineup. But headed into this weekend, what are your thoughts about the weekend series with the Braves after the fireworks over the 4th of July?
Yeah, and they've played very well versus Atlanta. Atlanta's throwing Max Fried, and they're throwing Charlie Morton, Max Fried, Ian Anderson. So this is as good as it's going to get. And Miami went through Sandy, so he's clearly not available to pitch this weekend. And look, we're really getting close to the point of figuring out if this is just completely unrealistic for them to get back in it, or if they are. You know, I've kind of made it clear they're 10 games under 500. Their odds to make the postseason on Fangraphs, I believe, are less than 1% or close to it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you a story that is fiction. I can't do that at this point. The Mets have seven games coming up against the Pirates.
Yep.
So if they take care of business against the Pirates and the Marlins just play 500 ball over the next 2 weeks, that's it. Yep. I mean, there's really not much to talk about at that point. The other thing that I also in talking to somebody outside of the organization who made a really good comment to me the other day when we were sort of talking about the Marlins and what their direction was and where they're going from here, the person said to me, hey, Craig, listen, the other thing that you're not considering, and it's really true, is that if Miami does decide that they're still in and they want to stand pat, do they really think that Washington, Philadelphia, New York, and Atlanta are not going to add people?
Well, exactly.
Miami's going to be fighting with those teams too.
Exactly.
All those teams are going to add little people. All those teams feel they're in it. Mm-hmm. So, like, is it the best course of action for Miami to say, oh, we're still sort of in it, and then the Mets go ahead and get, like, you know, Chris Bryant or something insane. Right. It's like, whoa, I thought we were in it. Now we see they got Chris Bryant. Maybe we should trade. I think Miami has a realistic view of this thing, which essentially means they have to go, like, something insane, 11-1 or 12-1. And look, if that happens, we have a different conversation. Right. But realistically speaking, They'll probably fight really well against the Braves. There'll be a few one-run games. It'll be very exciting. They'll be screaming at the end of the game one way or the other. They'll win. They'll lose. It feels like every game has more or less been the same. And I think that this weekend will be that too. But I hope everybody has a great weekend. I hope everyone has a nice all-star little break. I would encourage everyone to watch Ohtani in the Home Run Derby on Tuesday and watch him pitch and hit. You're about to see something you've never seen before and may never, ever see.
Yeah.
So I am definitely all in on that. And for all of the bitching and complaining that we do with Major League Baseball, and they don't do this, and they don't do that, and they don't do this, they got this guy in derby and pitching and hitting in the game. And does anybody say anything about that? No, it's exactly what everybody's been asking for. Yep. So give baseball a little credit when they do something right, too. And this is getting it really right. So I'm very excited to see that next week. And with that, Jeremy, I hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, a three-game sweep would go a long way for the Marlins. That's all we'll say. And we get to watch a guy who has brought me as much joy as anybody on the Marlins this season, Zach Thompson, on the hill. That guy has been a joy to watch. But Marlins fans, enjoy your weekend. We will be back next week with an episode of Swings and Misses to review the MLB draft and, you know, preview the second half of the season. Obviously, these three games are big this weekend. Go ahead and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review. Give us a 5-star rating. And as always, enjoy your weekend of Marlins baseball. We'll talk to you next week.